So tonight, we are reading from the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, 24, because we serve Krishna 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. So we will read from 7, 24. Yesterday they read the verse about Antapatu Falantesham Tadbhaviti Alpamedisham, right? Is that correct? Alpamedisham, little intelligence. Someone calls you Alpamedisham, that's not a compliment. Right? All right. So, we have it there, Avyaktam. It's on page 354 of this book. Others have books? Vyaktim. Apanam. Man. Oh, I forgot the invocation. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
All right, now we will start again. Avyaktam, vyaktim, apanam, manyate, mam, abhudaya, param, bhavam, ajanato, mamavyayam, anutamam, Avyaktam vyaktim apanam.
Avyaktam vyaktim apanam.
Manyate mam abhudaya. Param bhavam ajanato. Mam avyayam anutamam. Avyaktam vyaktim apanam. Manyate mam abhudaya. Param bhavam ajananto. Mam avyayam anutamam. Avyaktam vyaktim apanam. Manyate mam abhudaya. Param bhavam ajananto. Mam avyayam anutamam. Avyaktam vyaktim apanam. Manyate mam abhudaya. Param bhavam ajananto. Mam avyam anutamam. Avyaktam. Non-manifested. Vyaktim. Personality. Apanam. Achieved. Manyate. Think. Mam. Me. Abhudaya. Less intelligent persons. Param, supreme. Bhavam, existence. Ajanataha, without knowing. Mama, my. Avyayam, imperishable. Anutamam, the finest. Unintelligent men who do not know me perfectly think that I, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, was impersonal before and now have assumed this personality. Due to their small knowledge, they do not know my higher nature, which is imperishable and supreme. Let's read that together. Unintelligent men who do not know me perfectly think that I, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, was impersonal before, and have now assumed this personality. Due to their small knowledge, they do not know my higher nature, which is imperishable and supreme. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Think about it for a minute. We'll come and ask us, what is Krishna trying to say by this verse? Don't say it right away, but think deeply. You know, what is Krishna saying here? He said something about the demigod worshippers. But what is Krishna trying to show us about himself in this? It's what? Doesn't Krishna have an impersonal aspect? No? Aspect, yes. Isn't the Brahman also part of God? Yes, it isn't the primary part. Purport. Those who are worshippers of the demigods have been described as less intelligent persons. And here the impersonalists are similarly described. Lord Krishna, in his personal form, is here speaking before Arjuna. And still, due to ignorance, impersonalists argue that the Supreme Lord ultimately has no form. Yamunacharya, a great devotee of the Lord in the disciplic succession of Ramanuja, has written an appropriate verse in this connection. He says, Tvam Shila Rupa Charita Param Prakritai Satvena Satvikataya Prabalayas Chas Shashtrai Prakyata Daiva Paramatya Vidam Matas Cha Daiva Sura Prakritaya Pravati Bodham. My dear Lord, devotees like Vasudev, Vyasadev, and Narada know you to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By understanding different Vedic literatures, one can come to know your characteristics, your form, and your activities. One can thus understand that you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But those who are in the modes of passion and ignorance, the demons, the non-devotees, cannot understand you. They are unable to understand you. However expert such non-devotees may be in discussing Vedanta and the Upanishads and other Vedic literatures, it is not possible for them to understand the Personality of Godhead. In the Brahma Samhita, it is stated that the Personality of Godhead cannot be understood simply by study of Vedanta literature. Only by the mercy of the Supreme Lord can the Personality of the Supreme be known. Therefore, in this verse, it is clearly stated that not only are the worshippers of demigods less intelligent, but those non-devotees who are engaged in Vedanta and speculation on Vedic literature without any tinge of true Krishna consciousness are also less intelligent, and for them it is not possible to understand God's personal nature. Persons who are under the impression that the absolute truth is impersonal are described as abhudaya, which means those who do not know the ultimate feature of the absolute truth. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that supreme realization begins from the impersonal Brahman and then rises to the localized supersoul. But in the ultimate word, in the absolute truth, is the personality of Godhead. Modern impersonalists are still less intelligent, for they do not even follow the great predecessor, Sankaracharya, who has specifically stated that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Impersonalists, therefore, not knowing the Supreme Truth, think Krishna to be only the son of Devaki and Vasudev, or a prince, or a powerful living entity. This is also condemned in the Bhagavad Gita, Avajananti mam muda manushyam tanum ashritam. Only the fools regard me as an ordinary person. The fact is, no one can understand Krishna without rendering devotional service and without developing Krishna consciousness. The Bhagavatam confirms this. Atapite Deva Padambuja Dvaya Prasada Lesanugrita Evahi Janati Tatvam Bhagavan Mahimno Nachan Ya Ekopi Charam Vichintavam. My Lord, if one is favored by even a slight trace of your mercy, of the mercy of your lotus feet, he can understand the greatness of your personality. But those who speculate to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead are unable to know you, even though they continue to study the Vedas for many years. One cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, or his form, quality, or name, simply by mental speculation or by discussing Vedic literature. One must understand him by devotional service. When one is fully engaged in Krishna consciousness, beginning by chanting the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Then only can one understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Non-devotee impersonalists think that Krishna has a body made of this material nature, and all his activities, his form, and everything are maya. These impersonalists are known as mayavadis. They do not know the ultimate truth. We'll read a little more of this purport later because it's kind of long. But as it says in the Vedas, that the Supreme is Brahm iti, Paramat iti, Bhagavan iti, Sabhyate. That the Lord is known as all-pervading effulgence. He is also the Supersoul within the heart. And he is Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And both the impersonalists and the personalists believe in these three aspects. It is just a question of which one comes first. And the difference, one difference, of course, is the Vaishnavas understand, as Krishna is saying here, that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead standing before them, that this aspect is the most important. But the Vaishnavas appreciate that God is within the heart. They appreciate that the Brahman is Krishna's all-pervading effulgence. But we see Krishna is talking here about the impersonalists. What do they think different between the personal and the impersonal? We understand that all three of these are aspects of God. They are all real. They're all actuality. Not like an actor in a play who takes on a personality. He isn't really that person. So what does Krishna say here about the impersonalists? What do they think he's done? From the verse, what has he done? What? No, what do they think that Krishna has done? And why do they not respect the personality of Godhead as much as we respect the Brahman? What do they think Krishna has done?
They think that they have taken a maya form.
What's the word he's used? Read in the verse. What does it say they think he's done? It's not that long a verse. Someone should be able to. What is it that the impersonalists think that Krishna has done?
He has assumed a person.
Assumed. Now what does assumed mean?
Not real.
It's like if I assume your identity and start writing checks and charging bills in your name, are you happy? Assumed means it's not really that. Say, hi, my name's Bob Jones. I'm assuming that personality. It's not another aspect of me. I'm assuming something that's not really me. So the impersonalist not only... We call them Mayavadis. Do they call themselves Mayavadis? Is there a temple called the Mayavadi temple? Why is it that what do they call themselves? Who knows?
They call themselves Krishna.
No, what do they call themselves? Something Vatis.
Advaitas.
Brahmavatis, yes. Brahmavatis or Advaitas. We call it Mayavati because they are thinking that not that the impersonal is more important than the personal, as Krishna is saying here, that the personal is the most important, but they think that the personal is a form of illusion and only the Brahman is real. Whereas we say that both are spiritual, but we say that Krishna is the superior. Later on in Bhagavad Gita, he says, Brahmano hi pratishtanam. I am the basis of this impersonal Brahman. Just like the light bulb is the basis of the light, the sun is the basis of the sunlight. Without the light bulb, can you have light? Without the sun, can you have sunlight? Without the light bulb, can you have sunlight? Yes, you can. Because the sunlight is the supreme. So, we may have forms of Maya. Just like the light bulb is small and can only do so much. So we may have forms that are covered by Maya, but Krishna is not covered by Maya. This is the difference. We are asat, achit, and nirananda. We are not full of knowledge. We are full of ignorance. We are unhappy. And whereas Krishna is eternal, full of knowledge, and full of bliss. And Krishna is explaining it very carefully here that they consider this demeaning. How could they get the idea that he's impersonal? They do not know me perfectly. They think that I, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, have assumed this personality. Due to their small knowledge, they do not know my higher nature, which is imperishable and supreme. So what does it tell you there? They're saying that the form of Krishna is a form of Maya and it's something temporary. Krishna says it's imperishable and supreme. It's always existing. This is the difference here. Krishna is very clearly giving us the idea that the personal is the most important. Now, a person comes into the room and you deny them to appreciate their house or their artifacts instead of them, who comes to talk to you and says, oh, look at the nice things this person's house has. Look at all the nice facility that this person has. And you're ignoring the actual person who is trying to relate to you. Think how insulting that would be. You invite someone as a guest to your home. And as you're trying to communicate with them, they are glorifying the objects created by you. The home you have and the beautiful view you have and the things that you have without paying any attention to you whatsoever. So since Krishna, the effulgence, the Brahman, is something coming from Krishna, if we are paying attention to that and not to Krishna and thinking that he has assumed this, Krishna is saying that they're less intelligent. And by being less intelligent, they're insulting the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we find that we actually give more respect to the Brahman effulgence than they're giving to the form of Krishna. They're thinking it is just some temporary manifestation. That form cannot be eternal. But if we think about something, right? We think about some of the things that we understand that God has male and female aspect. Otherwise, if we have something God doesn't have, that makes us greater than God, right? So, everything comes from something, right? Electricity comes from electricity. Water comes from a body of water. You can't have water come from something that has no water. So how can the Supreme Personality be only impersonal? And how can it manifest personality, something it doesn't have? We're calling it an it now because that is the way they look at it. If it is impersonal, and has no form, how can it manifest something it doesn't have? Right? Like monkeys create other monkeys. Dogs create other monkeys. But a dog cannot create a monkey, right? A monkey cannot create a dog. The monkeys sometimes borrow the puppies and carry them around when they lose their own. But it doesn't mean that they've created a dog, does it? Right? Doesn't mean they had puppies instead of monkey babies. Sometimes you've seen this? Anyone seen this? I've seen it, where they're carrying around a puppy instead of a monkey. Because probably theirs died. Trouble is the monkeys hang on and they can't hang on. But if God is impersonal, how can he create something personal? And if he has no personality or form, how can we have something he doesn't have? This is a point to think of, especially as he's saying here that we've assumed this poor form and personality. But is there anyone that assumes a form and personality? Who does that? Can you think? Do you know anyone that assumes a form and personality? Besides that, who else? All of us do, don't we? Aren't we all acting to be such and such and such and such? We're born in a family, and our parents give us a name, and with that name, that must be us, right? Isn't it? Whether they call you John, or Mahesh, or Jagadish, or Pablo, or wherever you're from in the world, they think, oh, that must be me. But did your parents have some divine inspiration that they knew a name that was actually you? Did they? Or did they just pick a name out of a book of baby names? Something like that, right?
In India, they go to the astrologers.
Yes.
And look for the name as per the time and time.
Yes.
They look for the name and then the astrologer re-gives the name.
But is that name actually them?
It is not, but that's yes. That's what the feeling
is. Yes. And we also give names in relationship to Krishna. But the point I'm making is that this is actually an assumed personality. Because were you that name in your last life? And in next life, will you carry that with you? So haven't you assumed it like the actor? The actor is a certain person, and he gets out and performs a play, and he acts as a certain person. And then when the play is over, he goes back to his person and then assumes another personality in the next play or movie that he's in. And that's what we're doing. We are assuming a different personality. We think that the personality we have now is our real personality. We think that is so very real. But we think Krishna has assumed his personality. It is the other way around. It is like we look... The material world is like a dead stone. But yet we look at the deity like he's just a stone, and the material world is something full of life that we should worship it, right? Because it has some great pleasure going on. Whereas it's the other way around. Krishna is alive in the form of the deity, and the material world is in a dead position. So we are actually insulting Krishna by thinking that he is assuming this form and personality. So that is why they are called Mayavadis, because they think that if God is controlled by Maya, then Maya is stronger than God, isn't it? If God can be put in illusion, then illusion must be God, because illusion has to be the greatest, God has to be the greatest thing. So if God is put in illusion, then illusion is greater than God. Some of them are confused about this idea, like Christians. They have an idea that there's a good God and the devil's a bad God. And sometimes God wins and sometimes the devil wins. And they think that the devil can interfere with your service to God even when you don't want him to. They can blame it on the devil. Just like when I told people I would go to my rock and I would pray for some way to develop love of God. And when I decided, I got the inspiration that I needed to give up illicit sex and intoxication to get the love of God. And I thought about it for a while and thought, well, I'll do it later. Like Bhadri Narayan Swami was saying about St. Augustine. He says, please, God, make me chaste, meaning celibate, but don't do it yet. So I thought, yes, I'll do this, but I'll do it later. Then I thought, no. It's either a good idea and I should do it, or it isn't. Right? Like if I'm giving away kilos of gold, I think that's a great idea, I'll get one later. Is that what you would think? Would you? I'll get one later, not now. You would want to get it now, wouldn't you, right? So I thought, if it's worthwhile, I said, okay, God, I'll give these things up for you. And I said, send me some way to develop love for you. And as I opened my eyes, as far away as the camera is, was a devotee in saffron walking over to me. And I said, what made you come here? He said, well, we were up on the hill chanting, and I had this uncontrollable urge to come down to the beach. He said, would you like to chant with us? And so I told the one Christian boy about this. He says, well, maybe the devil interfered with your prayer to God. You know, they're thinking they're going to pray, please God, give me this, please God, give me that, and God will hear that. But when I'm willing to surrender things and ask for some way to love God, God's going to, the devil can interfere with that and get in the middle. I'm saying, please God, send me a way to develop love for you, and I'll give up these things for you. And the devil can interfere with that? But he's not going to interfere when they say, like they offer prayers like the people sing the song, Om Jaya Jagadisha Hari, give to me a house by the sea, right? Give me money, give me this, right? People are singing for some benefits. So if people are asking God for some benefits, how is it they think when you're asking God for service that this devil can get in the way of that? Does that mean this devil must be as powerful as God? If that's the premise, it must be. But what would be the point of praying to God with surrender if the devil can get in the middle of it? So this is the idea we know, is that the devil is not greater than God. The impersonal feature is not greater than God. And neither is Maya or illusion greater than God. And if we think that Maya is greater than God, and God can, we are God, but we're in illusion, what are we called? We think that Maya is greater than God, and we can be in illusion. What are we called? Mayavatis, because Maya is the supreme. Should we read a little more of this purport? Let's see here. The 20th verse clearly states, Kames taiste ritagyana prapajante naya devataha. Those who are blinded by lusty desires surrender unto different demigods. It is accepted that besides the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there are demigods who have their different planets, and the Lord also has a planet. As stated in the 23rd verse, Devan deva yajo yanti madbhakta yanti mam api. The worshippers of the demigods go to the planets of the demigods, and those who are devotees of Lord Krishna go to the Krishna Loka planet. Although this is clearly stated, the foolish impersonalists still maintain that the Lord is formless and that these forms are impositions. From the study of the Gita, does it appear that the demigods and their abodes are impersonal? Clearly, neither the demigods nor Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are impersonal. They are all persons. Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he has his own planet, and the demigods have theirs. Therefore, the monistic contention that ultimate truth is formless and that form is imposed does not hold true. It is clearly stated here that it is not imposed. From the Bhagavad Gita, we can clearly understand that the forms of the demigods and the form of the Supreme Lord are simultaneously existing, and that Lord Krishna is Satchitananda, eternal blissful knowledge. The Vedas also confirm that the Supreme Absolute Truth is Anandamaya Vyasat, or by nature full of blissful pleasure, and that he is a reservoir of unlimited auspicious qualities. And in the Gita, the Lord says that although he is Aja, unborn, he still appears. These are the facts, and we should understand from the Bhagavad Gita. We cannot understand how the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be impersonal. The imposition theory of the impersonalist monist is false, As far as the statements of Gita are concerned, it is clear in that the Supreme Absolute Truth, Lord Krishna, has both form and personality. So, the difference is that the impersonalist tries to understand God by the ascending process. He's thinking, I will hold my nose, and I will meditate, and I will merge into the existence of God. Move over, God, because here I come. And I will force my way into the Brahman, and I will become God, and move over, because here I come. Right? This is the process called ascending. We're going to ascend to be with God. But to understand the personal form of God, we have to render some kind of devotional service. There's different things that we can do, starting with hearing and chanting and remembering, offering service, praying to the Lord and the spiritual masters, worshiping the deity, making friends with the Lord, and surrendering what? Some things? Most things? Or all things? Which one? Many? Everything! Everything except the things that are difficult and the things we don't want to give up. Except for those, right? We give an exception. Please God, I want to surrender everything to you except for this and except for that. We give an exception clause, right? Exceptions to that, right? Exceptions to the rule. And that we don't surrender. But we do this, don't we? I'll surrender everything to you, God, but I don't want to do this, and I don't want to do that, and I do want to get this. So we don't want to perform the devotional service because we want to do something for ourselves. And devotional service can be great big service of preaching all around the world, or it can be just cooking the milk for Krishna. It is the service that Krishna sees that's important. And by this service, he can reveal himself even to the simplest person. So we offer a leaf, a fruit, a flower, or water, and then we keep the best of the millions for ourselves. Is that it? Right? There was a joke like this with the Catholic priest and the Protestant preacher and the Jewish rabbi. And they said, when they give money to the church, how do you decide which money belongs to you and which money belongs to God? Because we're thinking, I'll do some of the service for myself and some for God, right? A little bit here, a little there. So the Catholic priest says, well, I put out a hat and I throw all the money up in the air, and whatever lands in the hat, God keeps. Whatever goes outside the hat, I keep. And the Protestant says, well, I do it the other way around. I throw it up in the air, and whatever lands in the hat, I keep. And whatever goes outside, God keeps. And the rabbi says, well, I do the same thing, but a little differently. He says, I throw it up in the air, and whatever stays up there, God keeps, and whatever falls back on the ground, I keep, right? So which one of these is engaged in pure devotional service? Which of the three? None. Oh. So these different ways to figure out excuses of how I can have Krishna serve me. Right? The material world is tricky when we think we're going to be served. But when we think we're going to do the same God thing to God and trick him, I'll pray to him now. Like George Carlin, a comedian, said that he'd heard, he must have read it from Prabhupada's books, the statement where the shopkeeper is saying, please God, make sure that shop is locked up so no thief gets inside. And the thief is praying, please make sure that the shop is unlocked so I can steal something. But do we really think God is sitting around waiting for us to pray to him with instructions? And when he gets conflicting instructions, he's confused? I was watching part of this when they were having the election results to see who was going to become the president of the United States, and they had a very good commercial on there. in this commercial. The cockroach is coming out of the bottle of liquor. He says, yeah, my last life, I used to drive drunk all the time. And he says, but it was no problem until the time I couldn't see the trunk because I was too drunk. And as he comes out of the bottle, the gecko's looking at him. He says, please don't eat me, Mr. Gecko. I promise not to drink anymore. I promise never, never to do it again. And then it says, don't depend on the afterlife to give you a good chance. Don't drink and drive, right? So the premise is good. Yeah, he did get an afterlife, even though he drank and drove. But he got born as a cockroach, right? So the idea is that, you know, just because we get another chance, you know, if we do something wrong, we may get it as a cockroach, which can't be too good, right? Unless the cockroach gets to live inside a liquor bottle and still be drunk. Is it true? And one person in Vrindavan, I told him years ago that, you know, the alcohol is going to kill you. And he says, well, I'm a good man. I said, that may be, but it's going to kill you. And that person died recently. So we have to see that the things we do to ourselves, we get the result for. These material bodies are already fragile. Remember, there was something written on a cup. It said, this life I lead is way too difficult for the fragile body that I live in, right? Because as we're trying to increase our engagement in the material world, our body is less and less inclined. It is already getting older, isn't it? Everyone's getting older, and we have to take care of it. So when we're not taking care of it, we get in more trouble. The same way we have to take care of our spiritual life. We have to remember that Krishna is a person and that we're offering things to him. Not that we're just appreciating him so much and that whenever we need him, we ask him, now, okay, I need you again. Can you give me this and give me that and give me this? You know, we don't like it if we have a friend that every time they see us, oh good, I'm glad I got a hold of you because I need some money and I need a ride and I need some more of this and I need this change and I need that change and I need, right? Isn't that it? That's the way people think. Please defeat my enemies. Like God's going to go out and get your enemies for you, right? So which ones are supposed to be our enemies? We have a couple of enemies like lust, anger, greed, those ones. But when someone is praying, please God, destroy my enemies, do they mean that? Is that what they mean? Not usually, right? They're not meaning surrender. So the whole point Krishna is making here is that he hasn't assumed this personality, that this personality is the basis of all of the other aspects. And this is why we perform the worship for Krishna. We're not wasting our time. And Prakasananda Saraswati said to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but you're a sannyasi, why aren't you just studying this Vedanta Sutra? Why are you just doing the sentimental service? But when we do studying, we do the studying so that we can get love. And we do the love so we can also understand how to love. But we have to understand that the personality of Godhead is the main part. And there are so many tricks in this. Because Krishna is the personality, do we just read about his pastimes in Vrindavan? Or do we just read only philosophy because the absolute truth is the one that is all-pervading and everywhere? You know, we don't concentrate on just either one. We read about Krishna's pastimes. But we need some basis first, you know, to understand that Krishna is a cowherd boy doesn't mean so special, except that you understand that he's a supreme personality of Godhead and he enjoys being a cowherd boy with his friends, right? If you think that the grandfather had the child on, had his grandson was on his lap and going, giddy up, treating him like a horse, right? That's not such a big thing, is it? But we see that this is the way Krishna is. And it was a big thing because in London, Lord Gladstone was the Prime Minister of England during the time of the English Raj when it had India and was so famous. And The one reporter was trying to get an interview and he couldn't get a hold of me. He looked over the wall and he saw that Gladstone's grandson was on his back and going, "Giddy up, go faster, horse, go faster, horse." And he was all down on his hands and knees and walking across the grass with the grandchild because he wanted to play with him. So Krishna is the same way. He is so great and powerful. Just because Lord Gladstone had a child on his back telling him to go faster, did that mean he wasn't very powerful? No, he had India under total control and England too. So that means that even though they're powerful, they want to engage in pastimes. And we can't become confused about this. Just because Krishna has an all-pervading effulgence doesn't mean that's more important than his personality. And just because Krishna plays like a coward boy doesn't mean he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's why Brahma decided to trick him. That if Brahma had tricked him, instead of himself being tricked, the chapters in the Bhagavatam would not be called Brahma Vimohan Leela, but Krishna Vimohan Leela. But is it called Krishna Vimohan Leela, where Krishna was illusioned by Brahma? Is it called that? If Brahma had illusioned him, it would have been that, right? So because Brahma didn't illusion him, does that mean he didn't try? He did try, didn't he? Now, if Brahma can't illusion Krishna, then who can? Did Krishna very easily just expand as all the cows and the cowherd boys? Or was that a big job for him? He's, oh no, now I got more work to do. What am I going to do now? Brahma's taking those away. I'm going to have to work really hard to create more cows and cowherds. Just like a flash, like that, he created them. Do you know how he did that? No, I can't answer that either. Someone asked me, can you explain how when the residents of Mathura went to bed, they were in Mathura. When they woke up, Krishna had moved them to Dwarka and a whole big city was created. And someone says, can you explain how Krishna did that? I said, well, there is an explanation, but I couldn't understand it and I can't explain it to you. There is a method Krishna uses, but it's something beyond our understanding. Even like Einstein, who developed that theory of relativity, someone says, can you explain the theory of relativity? He says, yes, but not in such a way that you would understand what it meant. So Krishna could explain how he did that, but do you think you'd be able to understand that? Could you duplicate it yourself? Could you? Could you fool Krishna even though he's just a cowherd boy? If Brahma couldn't do it, could we? He's got four heads. He can do a lot of thinking. And he couldn't do it. So the point Krishna's making here is just because in his form he's very personal and very close to us does not mean that this form is not Bhagavan, which means all-powerful, all-rich, all-famous, all-intelligent, all-renunciate, and all-loving. But that's why we use the name Krishna, because we know that God is all-powerful, and we know that God has all the money, but to us the fact that he's all-loving is the most important. So he comes in this form to show us how we can love him, and we're worried about the impersonal aspect, right? So let me show you this electricity. And Thomas Edison, the inventor of the light bulb, comes and says, well, let me show you how I invented this light bulb. He says, no, let me show you the light bulb itself. You know, the inventor of it is there, and you're more concerned with just the product of that inventor. So we're doing the same with Krishna. Plus, it's a lot easier to just kind of adjust however we want to the impersonal Brahman than it is to worship Krishna as a person. We feel that in Vrindavan. Sometimes we feel great love, and sometimes we know how incomplete, how wrongly directed we are, how filled we are with defects that keep us from being useful to Krishna. Anyone else experience those? Or which one doesn't have defects? Raise your hands. You have no defects? Okay. Only he has no defects. Wow. I only have two. Everything I say and everything I do. But other than that, there's none. So anyone like to say something about what this verse means to them? Does this mean we should go meditate on the Brahman because Krishna has assumed this personality? Has he? Did Krishna ever assume any personalities? Sometimes he says yes. Yeah, Mohini. Another real funny one is when when Abhimanyu went out and Krishna assumed the form and personality of Abhimanyu, and he went to the mother of Radharani Chatila, and he says, you know, that Krishna is going to come here disguised as me, and you know, you should keep him away. So when the real Abhimanyu came home, she's beating him with a broom, saying, go away, go away, go away. And he says, mother, mother, what are you doing? So Krishna assumed the form of that. What else did Krishna assume? He came as a gopi to Radharani to ask about, you know, what she was doing, and he assumed the form of that gopi. And then after Radharani closed her eyes and opened them, it turned out to be Krishna. Right? So he can assume those. He assumed the form of a gopi. He assumed the form of Abhimanyu. What else?
He assumed the form of all our cows and his friends.
Well, did he assume that or did he manifest as that? That might be different. Because those were all Vishnu forms. So he, in a sense, he did. He assumed those temporarily. He's not really. Yes, because he did. Because it's Vishnu assuming the forms because he's not really the cows and the cowherd boys, right? And he's not really Abhimanyu. He's really God behind that. But in the form of Krishna, is he assuming that? You can assume it, but you'll be wrong. Krishna's form is eternal, and it comes. Everything comes from that form. So if we think he has no form sometimes, if it's eternal, then he has to have form all the time. I mean, we can realize that the Brahman is everywhere, but we can't think that sometimes Krishna has a form and sometimes he doesn't. Right? It's always there. Sometimes he's manifest and sometimes he's not. But the form is always there. That's the whole point that's being made there. It's not temporary. It's an eternal function for Krishna to exist in this form of Krishna. This is why we offer the things to the form of Krishna, because we know Krishna has this form and we don't want to think him as an impersonal Brahman. Do we string garlands of flowers for impersonal Brahman? And you put it on the Brahman? Do you? Some people have a big om and they garland om. Some people don't believe in having deities. People believe in so many things. But we have to understand that Krishna is saying here, he didn't assume this form and personality. And someone who thinks that is less intelligent. Just like the worshippers of the demigods. So which one is good? The worshippers of demigods or the people who think Krishna is impersonal? Neither. This is what we call a false dichotomy. It's like saying, which is good? The winter in Siberia or the summer in northern India? Which one is ideal weather? Neither one. There's another choice. There's another choice beyond that. So this is the idea, is that we're trying to understand Krishna's nama, guna, rupa, and lila. His name, his form, his quality, and his pastimes. So what we do is that we just pretend to be one of Krishna's associates and assume the form of a great devotee and pretend to be in Krishna's lila. Is that it? Is that what we do? Just like, let's say you want to be a great patriot of India. So you go to Delhi tomorrow and you decide that you're the Minister of Home Affairs. Is it still Lal Krishna Advani? Is he still Minister of Home Affairs? Yes? Lal Krishna Advani? He's not in the government? No, he was in the 70s. But say when he was there, if you went to assume his position, could you say that you knew more than he did? He was in the government like over 40 years, you know that? Well, he was back in the 70s though, he was there. What about during the 70s? He was maybe he was a politician, but he wasn't in the government. He was a politician though. Yes. But you couldn't think that you knew more than him, right? You can't go to Delhi tomorrow and decide that you're the Minister of Home Affairs, right? But that's a great service to the country, isn't it? To be the Minister of Home Affairs? Yes? So wouldn't it be good service for you just to assume that position? Or do you have to be given that position? But you have to be given that position, right? You can't just show up there and move his things out of the desk and show up. The same way we can't just show up in Krishna's Leela without getting the chance to be there. All the people who are government ministers, they're either elected by people or they're chosen by people to be in that position. The same way, to be in Krishna's Leela, we have to be invited into Krishna's Leela. I'd like to just go into Krishna's Leela, but it doesn't work that way. First we have to understand about Krishna, and Krishna reveals more to us, and then he takes us to a planet where he's existing in his pastimes. I'd like to say, okay Krishna, I'm done now, just take me back to Krishna Loka and I'll be there. But the trouble is we're trying to stay here and enjoy this material world and be in Krishna Loka at the same time. And we're wondering why we can get confused. But the idea is that we have to understand that Krishna did not assume this form and personality, and we have to develop our Swarupa, our eternal form. We can't just assume it. We can't just decide that we're a gopi or a cowherd boy. It has to be revealed to us when Krishna decides that that time is right. These are Krishna's pastimes. Krishna invites, like the gopis, he invites them into the pastimes. We don't force our way into the pastimes. Well, some people do it. The Nidivan, Krishna still performs his Rasa Leela dance at nighttime. And some people climb the wall at nighttime to be there in Krishna's Leela. And what happens? They go what? Blind or what else? Or they go crazy, right? So does that mean they were able to force their way into Krishna's Leela? Does it mean they tried? They tried, right? But did it work? Is that the way we do it? Say, okay Krishna, your Leela goes on behind the walls, I'm just going to jump the wall and force my way in. Is that the process? Ascending. Okay, move over Krishna, here I come. Accept me just as I am. So we have to understand this about Krishna. Krishna is insulted when we think he's assumed this form and personality, or when we just try to force our way in without being invited. Just like the government position may be very important. But first we have to be qualified, and then we have to be asked to take the job. So the same way, first we have to be qualified to enter into Krishna's Leela, and then Krishna has to invite us in. We don't force our way in. We don't think, I'll just study how the gopis are and I will, and then I will automatically become a gopi, right? The gopis are dressed up and they're all beautiful, right? I see some men dress themselves up in a sari. They don't look very beautiful, do they? Do they? No, they don't look beautiful, do they? No. Do they look like, wow, look at those beautiful gopis? Is that what you think when you see them? No, you do. What's that man doing in a sari, right? I saw some a couple days ago out here. What's that man doing in a sari? I didn't ask him, though. So this is the idea. We don't think that Krishna's assumed this form and personality, and we don't force Krishna away from his form and personality, and we don't force ourselves into Krishna's pastimes. So are there any questions or comments on this? Yes?
Who built that wall? Not that far.
I don't know.
What happens when that wall wasn't there?
I don't know. Probably that's what happened, and that they had to build a wall so people didn't go in there. Yes?
You were saying that
Yes.
But Krishna also says that even if you want to go from the ring, you should come to me straight away. No Lord to give me one.
Yes. Say it's less intelligent. It's better to go to the demigods than not accept some higher authority.
But he says, but Krishna also says that even if you want to receive, you should come to me straight away.
Yes, but it isn't the highest thing. It's like Krishna talks in the 12th chapter about the different benefits. If you completely surrender to me at every moment, the benefits you get are different than if you practice the rules and regulations of bhakti. And the benefits you get if you just practice karma yoga are not the same. And eventually he says, if you can't do these, meditate or culture knowledge. If you can't do that, just do something self-situated, something unselfish. But the benefits for each of these things is less. So it's better to approach Krishna than the demigods. But if you approach Krishna for some material benefit, you're not going to get pure love of God. If God is spiritual and you approach him for material benefits, even though Krishna is spiritual, you're having a material relationship with him, not a spiritual one. But it's better than no relationship at all. Yes?
The story of Gajendra the elephant?
Yes.
He was fighting.
Do we have the microphone so they can hear on the radio?
Yes.
You want to bring Gajendra the elephant to explain? Here comes the microphone. You can tell us about your elephant friend.
Gajendra was fighting with his crocodile for a thousand celestial years.
Yes.
And he was in a spot where many demigods come and enjoy like a vacation spot for demigods. And this whole time he's fighting with the crocodile, he's never thinking of asking the demigods to help him. And then after a thousand years, he offers a flower to Krishna. Krishna comes very rapidly to see him. So, because he's a devotee, he's not looking for help.
And then he wasn't worried, huh? Then he could say, see you later, alligator, right? After a while, crocodile. Then he got free as soon as he surrendered to Krishna, right? That's the whole idea. We're thinking I'll do it later, but then the benefit comes later, right? If we surrender later, then the benefit comes later. If we surrender now, the benefit comes now, but we always think we can postpone it. We don't want to postpone the enjoyment. We want that right now, right? Is it true? Right now. Well, because the spiritual world is eternal, so that'll always be there. But the material world's temporary, so we have to hurry up and enjoy it, right? That's the way we think, right? But it doesn't mean it's valuable just because it's not as available. The valuable thing is more available, because once you get it, you always have it. Materially, it's like you work hard to get things and then pretty soon you're dwindling away. It's like a short flight in an airplane. It starts going up and then pretty quick it starts descending again. Is that true? It's like that. Any other questions or comments? Yes.
Right. Just like Prabhu, somebody comes in distress.
Yes.
This is four type of person come to me. So one comes in distress.
Yes.
When his distress is finished, then he again jump to material world.
Yes.
So how is that one? When he is taking Krishna's name, and how then again he is going in the material attraction after his distress is finished from chanting Hare Krishna?
Because we just ask God for what we want, and then when we get what we want, we're done with him, right? Is it like that? It's like, I'll be your friend until you give me what I want, and then now I don't need you anymore. Sorry. Thank God we're doing that way. And then once the distress is gone, he never gets in distress again, right? Is that it?
Yeah, he's in.
Does it come back?
Yeah, he doesn't come back because he's thinking, now I have everything, whatever I have asked Krishna, he has given me. So why should I turn back with him now unless and until again I come in distress, but if that person doesn't come in distress because you get more and more abuse.
They say, aren't you my friend anymore? You go, I don't need to be your friend anymore. You've given me everything I need. Now I'm done with you. Think how ungrateful that is. But especially if that's what we're approaching for, right? Like you go to the bank, not to worship there, but to use the ATM. And when the ATM works and the money comes out, that's not today, then you go away and leave it behind, right? You push the button, the money came out, you got what you wanted, you go away. So if that's all you want, then you go away. But so you have to, even if you want freedom from distress, you have to at least also want love of Krishna also. We have to try to purify our desires. Even if all of our desires aren't purified, we have to try to. We have to try to pray not asking for something for ourselves. When is it okay to pray to ask for something though? A couple times it's okay. When is it okay? To ask for love of Krishna, to ask for service, or to help someone else. Because if we're praying for someone else, then we're not being selfish. But if we just go to God with a list, this isn't a spiritual condition. Okay, God, I have a list for you now. He's going, oh, good. I'll come back with that list. So at least we have to understand what our motives are. Even if all of our motives aren't pure, at least some of them should be. And we should try to get more pure motives. Even if you need certain things, you should say, but more than that, I need love of Krishna. We have to make sure that at least more of it is going to Krishna than to the other things.
You said everything comes from Goloka, but Krishna has a form, we have a form. Do we have distress in Goloka?
No. Why do you think the spiritual world is called Vaikuntha, without distress?
So why do we have distress here? Like if everything comes from there, how do we have distress here?
Because this is the perverted reflection. This is the kingdom of God without God. It's a reflection. See, it's like a reflection. It's like the reflection of the tree by the river that's talking in the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. You see, in the reflection there's fruits, but can you pick those fruits? No. They're just a reflection. But it's a reflection. Just like if the fruit tree is by the bank of the river and it's an apple tree, you see apples in the reflection, but you can't actually use those apples. They're just a reflection. And so because of that, there's distress, because we see it, but it's not real. It's just a reflection.
Prabhu, this material world is the combination of the three modes of nature. We are always under that mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance. But if Goloka is above that,
yes,
that is why we are in distress, because we are the combination of the three modes of nature.
Yes, what we, it's just like saying that you know, if you stick your finger in the socket of the electric, you'll get a shock. Now, does that mean that the shock is always there? No. We can be in this material world and not be distressed when we're not connecting with the distress. But we are connecting with things that make us distressful. And because of that, we get distress. Whereas in the Vaikuntha or Goloka, we don't connect with things that give us distress. That's why. Yes.
Gopis, they look like they're in distress in the spiritual world, but it's the highest.
Yeah, that's something different. They're trying to do service, and they're distressed because of Krishna, or like when Kali had grabbed Krishna and pulled him underwater, the coward boys and Mother Yasoda were just distraught. But that's a kind of ecstasy thinking about Krishna.
So the reflection of that is in the natural world is a distress.
Yeah, but it's different. That distress creates happiness, whereas here distress does not create
exactly.
Happiness.
Like, love of God is
we have to try to experience that. I want to give him back the microphone. With
when Yudhishthira Maharaj was performing Rasuya Yudha, so that time Indra was disturbed. Why he came in distress that Yudhishthira Maharaj is making Rasuya Yudha? because he already had done last year and he doesn't want that Yudhishthira Maharaj should do the last year. So he was in distress. So this is in above everything, then why he becomes in distress?
But Indra is not in the spiritual world. He has a planet in the material world. He's not in Vaikuntha, he's in the material world.
He's a demigod or no?
Yeah. He's a demigod, he's not in the spiritual world. Sometimes Indra is Krishna. In Swayamvara Bhuva Manu's period, the Indra that appeared was a form of Krishna, because there wasn't somebody qualified to be Indra. So sometimes Krishna appears himself as Brahma or Indra when there isn't someone qualified. But that's a whole different story. Is that all? Yeah, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.